the Expand Pedal Power Battery Kit is the ultimate solution for gigging musicians who rely on pedals to shape their sound, giving you drop-and-go rechargeable power that's always clean, quiet, and reliable.
Content's free, our work isn't. So help us out and like and subscribe, right guys?
Right. Yeah.
Let's go. Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys for Premier Guitar. I'm hanging out at the Basement East in East Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm hanging out with Jeremy from This Will Destroy You. Jeremy, how you doing?
Doing all right. Yeah, good to be here.
Good to be here, man. I can't wait to see the show tonight, and you guys are in celebration of the, you know, 20 years, I guess, because you released it in 2005.
Yeah, technically on our own in 2005, and we started in 2004, so it's the 21st anniversary, really, but it's just kind of the theme we've been running with for the past year.
Now, what's it been kind of to revisit this music? I know that you've been playing it for obviously the 20 years or 21 years of its existence in different forms and fashions and a set list, but going from front to back, what's it been like revisiting that music and, you know, the chapter of the band?
Yeah, it's actually been pretty cool. It's pretty nostalgic to run through that stuff that, you know, maybe back in the day we might have been a little embarrassed about, but like going back, hearing it now and feeling the crowd's response to it, it does kind of take you back to a place where, I don't know, there's a different type of feeling, and some of it's nostalgia, some of it's being really proud and just kind of looking back and seeing all that's happened.
Yeah.
Over all those years, it's kind of wild all to, you know, think about all at once.
Now, if I'm correct in hearing different interviews that you've had, is that you were in a band prior to this, which was classified as, I think in your words, as a pop punk band?
Yeah, we're definitely pop punk.
So then what made the transition to kind of this style of music? Because that is very drastic.
Yeah, I started getting really into drugs.
That's a quick answer.
Yeah, you know, I was 17, 18, no, well, about 19 at the time. I started experimenting with stuff and like just wasn't into the same music, I guess, you know. Certain drugs get you into different types of music, so I'm not trying to promote drugs here. You know, you start taking mushrooms, smoking more weed, people show you new music, start hanging out with different kind of people, and I just didn't want to do pop punk anymore.
Yeah.
So I broke off from that band and tried to start a band with some of my friends who were into some more of the hardcore drugs out there and couldn't really get them to focus.
Yeah.
So I hit up everybody in the pop punk band and asked them if they wanted to do something different.
Yeah.
And it eventually became This Will Destroy You.
Now, were you aware of, like, I guess I won't call them contemporaries, but people that kind of laid the groundwork ahead of you, with that being Explosions in the Sky, in my mind, and Mogwai.
Yeah, sure. In terms,
so you were aware of those guys, and I know that you've even referenced Sigur Rós a couple times for that early material that you guys wrote.
Yeah, definitely Sigur Rós, parentheses, Talk, and the one before parentheses that I cannot pronounce, were big parts of it. Radiohead as well for me, and a couple composers that I was listening to quite a bit at the time. And I think we probably all had like the first Explosions album on our iPods back then,
yeah,
you know, and a Mogwai record or two, but yeah.
It's funny to look back at is that there's a huge explosion that happened around the same time that you guys were forming and writing that first record of bands that I will call your contemporaries, being Pelican, Russian Circles, Cloud Kicker, that all started in that 2003 to 2006 range.
Yeah.
And it's really fascinating to see how you guys informed that genre of music, and like how it kind of really blossomed in that time period from early 2000s to late 2000s.
Yeah, no, I feel we were very lucky at the time that we got into the genre to have the space to build in it and grow a fan base kind of before, you know, anybody could have an album out in a day if they wanted to.
Yeah.
So yeah, we got to be kind of part of the start of the blowing up of the genre, which was, I thought, really a big reason why I guess we would stand out now as opposed to if the band started maybe 5 years ago or
yeah.
10 years ago.
What do you think that you're most proud of in that time period, those first two or three records that you guys did together and kind of helped shaping that, you know, the instrumental post rock or instrumental rock genre?
Yeah, I think
what were you guys bringing to the table?
Just growing as songwriters. You know, there's, I think, a pretty big difference between like Young Mountain and Self-Titled, even though they're stylistically similar. I think you can hear the growth and how we approached writing in those couple years, and then a few years after that doing Tunnel Blanket, which is
left turn.
Yeah, opposite of what we're doing in a sense. So yeah, just I've always been proud of the fact that every album that we've done has been its own kind of thing.
You yeah.
know, like we're never really looking to recreate something that happened in an album before it.
Yeah, it's yeah. I know it's a chapter is not a good analogy, but it's kind of like looking at a photo book. It's like that, it's a time capsule of that, you, those group of individuals, what you created in those moments.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And even from Tunnel Blanket to Another Language is another transition, but it all through the moves in of the band and the morphs of the band is there's always a cinematic quality to the music. And you touched on it briefly is that you had some like film composers and compositions that were vital in creating the sound in your head that became This Will Destroy You.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that and like examples and then also musically how that informed how you play guitar?
Yeah, well, the way I approached guitar, especially for This Will Destroy You, was from composers like Gustavo Santaolalla, Harold Budden, Robin Guthrie, the stuff they did for Greg Araki, but other big influences were like Ligeti, Popolvuh, and I also enjoy a lot of classical music as well, but really the approach to like my guitar style and how I wanted to shape my tone, I give a lot of credit to Harold Budd, Robin Guthrie, and Gustavo Santaolalla quite
okay.
a bit.
Now, it's funny because that cinematic quality is in the music, but I don't know if you guys have, as a band or even yourself individually, have you filmed or scored a film?
Only a few, like a couple documentaries, a short film, and a restaurant, of all things.
Oh, really?
Critical, yeah, Vespertine in Culver City, which is a very unique experience.
Great nod
to it. Yeah, it's a really cool place if anybody gets a chance to check it out. But no, scoring is something I've always really wanted to get into, but it's just a hard world to break into.
Yeah, I imagine so. And it's funny because you guys kind of gotten through the back door by the different connections with your music's made in terms of like Moneyball and all the things.
Sure, yeah.
And
yeah,
commercial success in terms of commercials placement. But it's funny, it's like you didn't intend that, but that's also something that's going in the background of your brain and the goals.
Definitely, yeah. Licensing became big. I think it's the reason why we became successful enough to do this for a living was
yeah.
really like kind of after Moneyball happened was when we're like, oh, like we don't need our side gigs for now. We can build off this. And then the movies kept coming and But yeah, then we kind of stopped writing as much licensable type stuff, and hoping to get back into that world by focusing on writing stuff that's more in that realm. With different things that I'm looking to do in the future.
Yeah.
Because it would be nice to have that income back.
Yeah. Now, before we actually get into the gear, which I know people are waiting for, is what can you tell me about what it's like to do the restaurant thing with the music? What's that?
That was really cool. It was a very collaborative like project with everyone involved, from the architects to the like clothing designers, to the head chef there, Jordan. He was very instrumental and was very vocal about exactly what he wanted from everyone involved. So we had a very easy like framework to work around. And it's like a 4-story restaurant, and each floor has its own song. And he wanted a noise made that the building itself makes if you're outside, and the garden they have, so in a rooftop. It's really cool. It's just these sections that are going on their own, and as you go into the restaurant, you're led through every facet of the restaurant until you actually sit down to eat. So the focus there was really just to not write anything too distracting that can just be in the back and just pleasant. Kind of focus on doing kind of stars of the lid type stuff to make that happen. Yeah,
it seems like a fully curated experience, not just the food. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, from the second you walk up, there is
all
somebody
five senses.
Leading you through it. It's pretty cool.
Wow. Okay, Elide. One more question is, because you are also tailoring in or shoehorning in some other stuff from your new project, U Infinite, and on this current tour, and I know that the guys that are supporting you are part of that. But the main one that's not here is Raymond, and I want to get your take on what that's like to reconnect with him musically and as a friend.
Oh yeah, it's been great. Ray and I pretty much got started together since we were 13, 14. We've been in bands together. He went off to become a doctor after self-titled.
Yeah.
So it was cool to find out that he was still working on music whenever he had free time, and when he sent me some. Just some samples of things that he'd been doing. Just asked him if he wanted to put it together as an album, and we worked back and forth for a while, and it's been really cool. And he will be out playing like the full U Infinite sets that we have planned.
Okay.
For the festivals that we're playing, for Post Fest, Pelagic Fest, and Can Fest. Or sorry, he won't be at Can Fest, but he will be at Pelagic and Post Fest playing with This Will Destroy You and with U Infinite, so it'll be cool to perform with them again too.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a long bridge, but I'm sure there is a bridge there between self-titled and what you guys just put out this year in U Infinite.
Definitely,
in terms of like collaboration, working together, how you guys, you know, bring your ideas together and make one.
Yeah, we kind of picked up where we left off. I felt writing-wise, and we have very similar sensibilities in how we like to approach things. So. Yeah, it kind of felt like a spiritual successor to where we left off.
Right on. Yeah. Well, let's get into it. I've seen you throughout the years a lot of times with the Telly Deluxe.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, tell me about this one, obviously, but also how did you get hooked up with Tellys and kind of go that route?
So when This Will Destroy You first started going, I couldn't afford a guitar. My brother had a Telly that I borrowed, and I just kind of fell in love with it. And then the Deluxe I used forever was also a guitar that was borrowed that was pretty much gifted to me later on, but it took such a beating over 15 years that I actually just got this one about 2 years ago from Raymond.
Okay.
I've just love the tone of Tellys, and I can get by on other guitars, but for me nothing works for this kind of music the way that I want my tone to sound other than Telecasters.
Got it.
Yeah.
And what should we know about strings and tunings that you're going with for this self-titled and beyond set, we'll call it?
Yeah. So I'm sorry,
Young Mountain and Beyond.
Yeah. Oh, it's all good. I use 52 to 11 gauge strings. I like to have more body, more fullness than your standard like 48s or what have you. And we tune in E flat standard, and then drop C sharp as well, and also my guys told me to mention they think my picks are ridiculous, but I use the second thinnest picks there are out there. But
what do you dig that about those? What do you go for them?
For tremolo picking stuff, it makes it a lot easier on the hands, not breaking strings, and I get a lot more control over like how much energy I want to put into each string that I'm hitting. But I mostly play with my fingers.
Okay.
So the pick is for stuff that I need to pop, but I don't want it to be too much.
Got it.
Yeah.
And the amp behind us, is that yours or is that another borrowed?
That's mine. Yeah, that's mine. I just got it. I like the cleanness of the JC120s. I was considering getting, I used to play through a Music Man HD 130, which I loved, and it's still like my favorite tone I've had, but I have not tried their combo amps out yet. I don't know how their speakers sounded, but I know that these sound good, and it's a solid state. I don't have to worry about tubes as much as I love that sound.
Yeah.
For live, I'm like, it's gonna get tossed around in the trailer. I'm gonna go with something that I know can withstand it and sound close to how I want it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, would you say, like, kind of going back to those early days, what kind of amps were you using on tour there, you know, from 2005 to 2014,
15? Some Fender Twins and Deluxes for the most part.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Up until I got that HD 130. I think we all had like an orange phase for a second. I can't remember if that was before or during Twitty. But yeah, for me, it's mostly just been, either Fender, Music Man, or the Jazz Boys.
Okay, yeah, because you had mentioned off camera that you guys had gone from, you know, what you could afford to full stack,
yeah.
And now you're back to combos.
Yeah. Yeah, my full stack was that Music Man HD 130 with a couple custom cabs built by Janus Cabs that I loved. They sounded great, but older you get, the less you're able to carry, and and yeah, it's the less you need. I realized later on that you really don't need that much power on stage for what we do, and I like to leave a lot in the hands of our sound guy as well, so combos have just become the way to go for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's go into the pedal board and let's talk about this, because I was curious how you were going about recreating music that you did 20, 21 years ago.
Yeah.
With gear that, you know, may have existed then, but there's so much, gear has come so far.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious if there's anything from that era that is still on this board.
The only thing would be my Giga Delay,
okay.
My DD20, and this Tech 21 Boost RVB, which is probably the most essential thing to my tone.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you explain?
There is no other reverb that I have had that sounds as full as this one does, and gets like the exact, like whatever I'm hearing in my head guitar wise, like this is the pedal that's been able to do it every time.
Yeah.
And I've tried to run other reverbs for my standard tone, and there's some that sound good, but none that sound like this one.
Now that's interesting. I don't want to pigeonhole a company, and I know they have many products, but when I think of Tech 21, I think of drives or Sans amps.
Sure.
Yeah. So yeah, when you said reverb, I did not see that one coming.
Yeah, I randomly found it in a used music shop in New York when my whatever reverb I was using at the time, probably a Boss reverb or something, broke. And they had it there, and it was a reverb pedal, and I picked it up, and I never looked back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we got to hear it now. Can you?
Yeah, no, for sure. It's just the difference between the my dry, and I can turn the delay off here. It's just my tone immediately is what I hear when it's on. It just sounds like my guitar, you know. But if I were to switch over to, say, this, which I use for completely different reasons, and I'd have to change some settings here. It's
I've never... So both this RVB and then this pedal you just kicked on that we're alluding to, we're introducing right now, I've never heard of either one of them.
So this is a Walrus Audio Fundamental Ambient reverb pedal. And it's a lot of tail there, but... If I were to compare to It just, everything about this, I just love tone-wise. But this other one that I have, that I just was given by Walrus, they've been so nice to me since I've been in OKC, is my Swell pedal, which is just, has like some of the nicest stacks without like really kind of tripping up over itself. So I've really been enjoying this one for swells and then also tremolo picking. But the Boost RVB is also a big reason why Tunnel Blanket sounds the way it does.
Okay.
Yeah. And I have not been able to get this tone also with any other pedal. Oh, need the delay. Yeah, and that's compared to something like this, which would be way too washed out. Sounds nice, but a little too much.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This has kind of been my secret weapon here for my tone.
Well, it's not a secret now, my friend.
I've tried to tell people before, but I don't know. It works for me.
Wow, it's such a cool sound because I didn't know what to expect, but that's a hallmark for sure of what you do for the band and your sound.
Just the right amount of tail, of thickness, and especially with stuff I play with my fingers, it's perfect, and things that I pick, it's pretty nice as well. Just works.
Yeah. Now, would you say a reverb pedal would be kind of, if you were, someone calls you up and say, hey, man, I want to make you a signature pedal. Is that your lane you think you land in?
I've actually been wanting a company to make a very good stereo, ping pong delay pedal, which Walrus just made, and I'm trying to get my hands on. That's been my biggest ask of the pedal companies that I've been in touch with. But if I were to do something signature, This Will Destroy You, it would probably be a reverb.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, let's touch on the other pedals we haven't been introduced to yet.
Sure. Yeah. Another pedal company we worked with quite a bit is Mr. Black, who also does Friday Club. We all used to be running his Super Moon Chrome reverb pedals.
Yeah.
They are great. But he gave me this Fury 6 as I was kind of getting over my rat distortion. I just kind of wanted something different. And he gave me this Fury 6, which is just, to me, just a better sounding rat kind of pedal. So difference here would be... I have the filter pulled back a bit on it just because of how bright things can get live, but
yeah.
I stack it with the Jupiter from Walrus to get even more thickness to my distortion here, so... Just a little nastier, a little grittier, and I love this Jupiter pedal. It's like my favorite fuzz pedal.
Is the Fury going, looks like it's going into
the
Jupiter?
It's going into the Jupiter. So yeah, I always have my distortion going into my reverb, not the other way around.
Why do you like that?
I just like my distortion to be reverberated instead of my reverb to be distorted,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then I keep my delays for the end. Because the same thing, I prefer my, or kind of opposite there, I prefer my... reverb to be delayed instead of my delays to be reverb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My last two pedals over here are brought out for specific songs. Kind of why my pedal board is always kind of a mess when people see it. depending on the songs that we're playing in the set will depend on what pedals I have with me.
Yeah.
These five are always going to be there, along with my volume pedal and my tuner.
Mm-hmm.
But I have the Roland Space Echo for War Prayer. It's the only pedal that's going to give me the... the tone I need for that, even though it's not set up exactly right at the moment. I'll have to check that.
You got time.
Yeah. And then another Mr. Black pedal over here, the Deluxe Bus, which is my tremolo that I use for clubs. Which, pretty simple tremolo with reverb. It has its own reverb on it, so I don't have to run reverb into it. But yeah, and I also will loop things on my DD20, send it into the tremolo, and mess around with it a little bit.
So. Now, through the band's discography, and I know you're starting a new kind of endeavor with U Infinite and can reconnect with Raymond, but what's kind of the proudest moment musically that you can look back on the 20 plus years of This Will Destroy You?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, being a part of Moneyball in the way that we were was pretty huge, just because we knew that they were going to use the song quite a bit, but when we went into the theater and actually saw it, we're like, oh, this is like the theme for the movie. And then they started using it for the Golden Globes and for the Oscars.
Yeah.
And like that year, the entire Best Picture category, where they go through all the movies, they're playing Mighty Rio Grande through the whole thing, which we didn't know they were going to do. It's probably the most my phone has ever lit up in my life. People that I haven't spoken to in decades were just hitting me up. Like, and sad thing was I wasn't watching it live.
Uh-huh.
I had it DVR'd so I could fast forward through the commercials, but I forgot to add the time at the end, so I actually didn't get to see it happen. I had to download some... I found it a day later online,
yeah.
A torrent, but it was all in Korean, but I at least got to, hear it,
yeah.
And that was cool, but I thought that Moneyball won, and that's why people were hitting me up, but no, that was really cool to see that, and I think that's one of those moments. Yeah.
Was that an organic kind of partnership? How did that happen?
So, from what I understand, I'm trying not to name drop here because I don't like doing it, but apparently Brad Pitt's a pretty big fan.
Okay.
And he got us also involved with World War Z. He was
adamant
about that, which was really cool. And we're also a part of Foxcatcher, which is
the newest one, or not newest, but like
what he did after Moneyball.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, not Brad Pitt, but the director.
Yeah.
And so it's cool to find that either the directors or their editors or somebody in there is a fan, and they, keep coming back to us when they do stuff. Clint Eastwood has asked us to work with him a few times, and that's been cool. Although he's kind of crazy.
Dirty Harry. Yeah.
But politics aside, it's still cool to be a part of people's artistic visions and get those calls. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't want to bring a dark cloud to this conversation, because it's been a great talking to you, Jeremy. I've listened to your music. It's been kind of a soundtrack to my life and leisure. Is just so people know, and everyone's got full of the speed, is that like you and Chris are no longer creating music together.
Correct.
Under the same banner. Can you kind of quickly do a definition of what's happened in terms of, because I know that you guys are touring separately under the name?
Yeah, no, we're still figuring out exactly how it's all going to work, but yeah, we reached a point to where we just went our separate ways, and this was the best solution for the problem at hand. I mean, we've been talking this out for, it's been going on since the pandemic started. So it's been a long road to get to this point, where we're both in a position where we can still do This Will Destroy You and do our own things. But yeah, unfortunately, This Will Destroy You won't be releasing any new material as This Will Destroy You.
Yeah.
Unless it's been previously recorded before the split.
Got you.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate your time, Jeremy, and I'm going to talk to the other fellows in the band real quick.
Great. Well,
thank you, man.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Hey y'all, I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So our rig rundowns for a long time now have been sponsored by D'Addario. And I'm thrilled to be using the D'Addario Expand pedal board. I've got this little guy that fits in my gig bag, and like many of you, I'm changing pedals all the time. I love having a board that can shrink as I'm shrinking my board or expand as I'm expanding it. And that's why I love the Expand pedal board. Their patented telescoping technology lets me instantly change the size of my pedals playground. It also features a unique cable management system and comes fitted with loops of Velcro, keeping everything neat and easy to swap. The two Expand versions comes with either one or two rows, depending on your needs. So a big thanks to D'Addario. Now, let's get back to more rig rundowns.
All right, we are joined by Nick. Nick, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Good, man. You are a Rig Rundown fan.
Totally, through and through. Yeah, I've been watching him. I don't even have to like the band.
Really?
I just like the gear.
Hell yeah, man. That keeps us employed, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
You probably watch more than I do.
Yeah, definitely. I can guarantee it.
Well, okay, so tell me about this guitar. You know, you know how to do this dance.
Yeah. So this is my first Jazzmaster. I bought it from the guitar player of Full of Hell. I just followed him on Instagram, and he was selling this and had put this awful, it's like really kind of like a sandpaper textured finish on it. You know, you can like see there. It's like,
can I touch?
Yeah, of course, please. There's no clear coat on it, so it feels kind of awful. But I love it anyway. And it was cheaper than it should have been. It's like a Vintera Jazzmaster, I think. Yeah, it was pretty cheap. He had a humbucker, like a Rails humbucker here, and I've never done a Rails single coil before, so I wanted to just try it out. You know, with this band, with what I'm doing tonally, pickups almost don't matter, you know? Like, I've been a Strat guy, and that's great, you know? But I just didn't need something super duper hot.
Okay.
So I went with this, and I'm kind of into it. I don't know. We'll see.
Jury's still out.
It's here now. So that's, you know, we'll stick with it for this tour, I guess.
And you don't need to be precious about this instrument and anything you do to it, because clearly, you know, with the job and the tape and...
Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't use the rhythm circuit. We're both pickups all the time.
Okay.
It's not anything super duper special.
And tonally, how do you complement what Jeremy's doing? What's kind of your role? Like, where do you feel like you're complimenting and then also, you know, contrasting?
Yeah, it's a lot of like, the way that I thought about learning how to play this music was kind of being Jeremy's like wet signal, you know, just like being the reverb pad behind, like, the meat of the song, mm-hmm. you know? And there's, you know, some lead lines and some melodies and stuff that I cover, but it's a lot of, like, getting rid of your pick attack and, like, just creating a pad wash, you know, full reverb guitar stuff.
Was that learning a new vocabulary for you, or are you kind of adept to that already?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like me and Johnny, we play in a bunch of, like, heavy bands together, so, like, I've been playing heavy music of many kinds for... That's kind of my wheelhouse.
Okay.
So it was definitely kind of a learning curve. Big part was, like, learning to play quieter, learning to play softer.
Yeah.
Work. I've never used a volume pedal before this band, and now it's, like, I'm attached to it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it took a lot. This is a band that I grew up listening to, and it, to me, was kind of, like, uncoverable. You know, it's like, why would you even try to play this music? So... Learning it was totally just a huge experience. You know, I learned a lot from dissecting this music.
I'm sure it'll also seep into your DNA. So when you and Johnny go revisit your projects,
absolutely,
this will kind of maybe get in there in a way.
Yeah, I mean, it already has. Literally, just having a pedal board like this. You know, this is the only pedal board I have. So with every band, whether I'm playing bass in a hardcore band or playing guitar in a metal band or whatever, it's this chain, more or less, you know? The pedal's on the board. You're going to use it at some point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give it a kick. Let's go through the PV. What's the story behind this?
So...
Beast.
I'm, like, super into all the, like, 70s solid-state stuff because it's really cheap, really loud. Again, for the metal bands, the heavy bands, like, the clean platform, $200, could run it through a full stack... technically a bass amp, so I could use it for bass, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a concert bass for a backup back here, the Sun. I have a concert lead at home. We have a couple of 400 series amps. This is the one that I decided to use for this band, and it works perfectly, you know.
Surprised you got some of those Sun amps, because I feel like the dudes in Red Fang have gobbled all those amps.
Well, they buy the Beta ones, and I can never afford the Beta lead or anything, so we go with the concert series, never paid more than $400 for an amp.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Bottom feeder.
Yeah, totally. That's how I roll.
Well, can you give us kind of a clean tone or like your bypass tone for just the amp?
And
we'll get into the pedal board.
Yeah, so here we go.
That's just the old Mississippi Marshall back there.
Yep, that's it. That's the volume pedal, you know. So I guess we'll start at the front. We've got the basic volume pedal, Ernie Ball. And then here, we haven't actually gotten into this yet, but this is a little ABY switch, because we have plans for some of the new material has like synth voices that I'm just going to patch into the interface and kind of do the MIDI controller thing.
Yeah, Jeremy was kind of talking about that off camera to really expand.
Yeah. So I have put it on the board preemptively. We haven't messed around with it since it's been there. We'll get around to that at some point. And then I kind of start with these two gain pedals. There's a company in Austin called Worshipper, and they do cabinets mostly, but they, this is Gremlin Audio, I think.
Okay.
They did a little collab, and that's just a rat with three different clipping options. Whatever the middle one is the one that I use. And then from there, it's a, Dead Air Audio. It's the Portrayal of Guilt pedal. And
some that's great like names.
Yeah, they're super cool. This thing is great. It's like, I think my favorite pedal. It's the most I've ever spent on one pedal.
Can we hear both of these?
Yeah, so here's that rat. And then this is what is basically a tube screamer with a clean boost. And then I kind of just mix it up with these three buttons here. And that's all three of them. That's fun to kind of, you know, I'm never doing
stack
the same thing twice.
Yeah.
Same thing the same way twice. And then from there, it's going up to this Boss DD200. And this thing is a pedal that has a lot that I don't use. You know, it was mostly because the tap tempo is super easily accessible, mm-hmm. and because I can have a few different voices just, you know, at the touch of my foot, and like, you, if you get into the nitty gritty, there's like a tone control and a parameter control, and I like to kind of dial a little bit of the high end off of my repeats, you know, just kind of go with that pad sort of thing.
The loudest thing is the first thing, like your attack, and then everything is behind it.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's just a little darker. Not that it matters a lot of the time, because then it goes into the version one of the context, the red banded context, and that's my no attack sound. It's just like, I don't really touch it a whole lot, except for I kind of will dial the decay a little bit, but that's just this. You know? So if this is behind it, the delay is behind it, it's just kind of adding more to the pad, you know? So there's that, and from there, I go to this. I was using a DD7 for a while, because I really liked the reverse on it. Something about the specific reverse on that one was really cool, but that kind of crapped out. So I got this DD3T, and that's just mostly because the tunnel blanket stuff is the delay sound into the reverb into the delay sound. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why that's there. It's about the only thing that does. But I kind of like, I don't know. I'm like doing a little bit of the tap tempo here. If my pedals are a certain way for certain songs, I kind of just leave all of my options open. You know, if I'm feeling more or less of a certain thing, I kind of just, you know, spur of the moment.
Yeah, kind of like that. There's spontaneity in the selection of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess also, like, I have a couple different looping options. So if I want a loop to go into my effects, I'm looping on the DD200, actually. Because none of the loops that I do really need to be, like, on a click or anything.
Yeah.
It's just part of the wash. So, you know, if I set a loop and then we're about to start a song, I'm going to go to my DD3 for the tap tempo that I might need for a lot of the, like, Young Mountain stuff is, like, very, like, quarter note delay heavy.
Yeah.
So that's going to happen sometimes, right? And then from there, for more of the noisier stuff, I like to send that whole chain into this exploder, the beautiful noise exploder, and that's like a, I don't know, it's like a fuzz distortion overdrive thing with a white noise in it that I really love, because it just sounds terrible.
Can we hear how terrible it sounds?
Yeah, it's like, so I'll start with no white noise. So we're going. And then it's got a few different clipping options, so.
Sounds like I'm frying an egg.
Yeah, exactly, and it'll get worse when you, like, I was on the no clipping, and here's like the asymmetrical setting, I think. You can dial that white noise with the tone knob on it, and then you can dial the envelope on the white noise as well, which is a lot of fun. Mostly it's just like, you know, for the last song that we play is Little Smoke, and that's just a noise part for me, mostly.
Yeah.
So I'll set a loop at the DD200 and just kind of screw around there. And I could probably, it sounds really good as a distortion, even if you aren't using the white noise.
Uh-huh.
But that's what it's doing in this set.
By that point, you're just painting with mud.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's just more is more. And our sound guy is, Oscar is the best. And I really tried my best to not piss him off. But I don't know. I don't think I try as hard as I should sometimes.
No, I mean, I feel like you got enough devices down here to, you know, make them angry.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like you got the loop going with all the distortion, and then you, I'm just starting to feedback with the delay, and then I turn the distortion on. And that's pretty.
Take that, Oscar.
Gets a little maximalist, you know.
Now what's the last one here, top left, with the Walrus Audio Slow? How do you use that?
So that's just a more basic reverb, you know. Like, if I, like, there are some songs like on Young Mountain and some of the U Infinite stuff where my articulation is important. You know, I'm like playing a guitar part.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, basic, nice sounding reverb. That's kind of that, and it's got, you know, some modulation functions that I don't super touch. However, sometimes if I'm going soundscapey, the top of the switch is the dark setting, which has an octave effect, a sub-octave effect, and I'll kind of dial that in just a little bit.
Okay.
You know? Very sparingly, though. It's like another pedal that is like too good for me. You know, it could just be like a random cheap reverb that I, you know, but you know, it sounds really good. It's awesome. Then I love the Walrus stuff. Yeah.
Well, Nick, I really appreciate it, man. I'm glad to have you on the show, and now you get to go watch yourself.
Yeah, I'm stoked on it.
Double thumbs up for Nick.
Yeah.
Let me talk to Ethan real quick. Last but not least, we are including the bass player this time. We didn't tell him to go kick rocks. Ethan is joining us. Ethan, thank you for doing this.
Of course.
Talk to me about your bass real quick.
My bass. My bass is a killer cheap tour bass. Marcus Miller Sire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which...
I've only heard really good things about them.
People have been geeking about them on tour.
Like for the value.
One. Yeah, they just like... I think people like seeing people play cheap guitars, you know? Like,
yeah.
I kind of like that, too, so... Like how Nick was saying, that's kind of where we come from, is just buying cheap gear.
Yeah.
Playing the shit out of it. So.
Yeah, there's, I don't know if you're familiar with Nick Reinhardt and Terry
Mellis. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
He tours with Squires.
Yeah, yeah,
makes his crazy carny music with Squires. So.
A lot of cats in Austin do that same thing, too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of the bands. So, I don't know. We just picked it up. Good deal. And it's just, it's kind of been a workhorse, honestly.
Now, do you use it with your other projects, or is this kind of just specific to Destroy You and You Infinite?
Only band I play bass in.
Okay.
Yeah.
What other instruments do you typically play?
I'm in like an industrial band where I play a bunch of drum machines and synthesizers.
Right on.
I play guitars in other bands. I write a lot with guitar. You know, I have jazz masters, stuff like that. Always offset.
Yeah.
Always like kind of offset buddies, but yeah. This is the only one I do bass in. So which is always funny to tell people, like, yeah, like what other bands you play bass in? It's like, oh, just Twitty. Like,
Just this one.
Just this one. Yeah, actually, I learned bass just to play with these guys.
Killer. Well, behind you is a tiny but mighty Dark Glass.
Yeah, this has been a killer pickup. Me, Johnny, and Nick kind of, like, since we play so much together and we share a practice space and stuff like that, I think we all pitched in like $150.
Oh, it's a community amp.
It's a community amp that we use for guitars and stuff too. And yeah. And it came with like a cool, it came like in a Pelly and everything. So it was like, a guy had a bunch of candy with it.
Oh,
for,
nice.
Like a killer deal. But yeah, we were using, we used Dark Glass a couple EU tours ago. We rented a Dark Glass and all of us were like, man, that amp's sick. And
yeah.
That one popped up in Austin for, like I said, it was like, you know, $350-$400.
And some candy.
Yeah, and yeah, you can't beat a Pelly, you know?
Well, talk to me about your pedal board real quick and how you're using everything.
Yeah, pretty simple. I kind of, unlike Nick, for all my bands, I have to rotate my board a lot, so it's always kind of got different stuff on it. But for Twitty, it's kind of always starts with the volume pedal, like everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do a lot of swell stuff, so I picked up this one with the tuner in it just to save a little bit of space.
There you go.
I saw my friend from Alex Alone using it, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. So I picked that up, got that going into a prototype Mr. Black did for the bass OD.
Oh, all right.
So it's the prototype of that. I was just sitting around one day in the studio and we were practicing, and Jeremy was like, hey, you should try this. And I tried it, and it was like the four going kind of fuzz on my board for a couple of tours. And then I just switched it out recently for this because I picked up this. So this is now my primary fuzz, is the bass war, which that mix valve, the like dry wet, is like massive for the bass tone.
Now, is the prototype, is that plugged in so we could hear it real quick?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like back and forth?
You want to hear like a, so it's clean? Well, that's with, you know. Yeah, and then this will be just bass. We just want big chunk.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a big thunderstorm.
Yeah. And then if I need a little bit more, I can tag it with this. That's just a little drive on the Badwater, because I have everything.
Okay.
I have my fuzzes going into the Badwater just to kind of give them a little bit of compression after.
Is that like a, is that a guitar specific drive or is that a bass drive?
This Badwater? Oh, this is a bass. The Badwater is the Walrus, like bass specific kind of preamp. Yeah. So you can hear it, like, and that's off, and then with the drive. Yeah, mostly when you're hearing me go distorted, it's going to be this bass war.
So. Got it.
It's going to be normally just that, yeah.
Right on. And what are you using the back talk for?
That was a
upside down one.
Yeah. Upside down. I you know, couldn't. Well, sounds, I figured better. It was like apropos for a back talk.
Oh, yeah,
upside
yeah.
Down. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just kind of using it for like little like ambient kind of swelly parts. I actually just added it, so I'm kind of playing around with it a lot on the board right now, which has been really fun.
I feel like this
fun.
Band is kind of a playground for experimentation.
Yeah. It just kind of adds this cool like, kind of get these cool trails. We just want like a little haunted sound.
Yeah, it's menacing for sure.
Yeah. But I picked it up for like synths and drum machines and stuff. I've just been using it.
And last little pink devil there we got.
Yeah. A little trim. The Topanga, how Jer was saying, he added his trim. I also add my trim for that song. So I like, not much. Just a little texture in the background.
Little depth
just to
there.
Add the little like shaky like kind of whoa.
Now for this
trippy.
For this band and then your only bass gig, are you playing pick all night or are you kind of going
I between? I swap. Yeah. I've been doing a little bit more finger style. I've been I'm using pick because like I destroy my hands. Like I hit the bass really hard because I come from, you know, playing guitars where you hit hard.
Yeah.
And so I kind of hit hard, so I, you know, to save my hands.
Oh, I could see the
Yeah. I kind of got to. So, but then for some of the more kind of controlled stuff, I'll use finger style, use a little bit of plucking. And and then if I drop my pick, you know, I need to know how to hit it with my hands. So, yeah.
Well, right on, Ethan. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
Yeah,
thank
all right.
You.
Everyone stay safe out there and keep rocking.
Thank you. satisfaction of finishing your pedalboard for the 38th time.